Welcome to the Plant Grow Reap podcast.
All right, so welcome back to the Plant Grow Reap podcast. I'm Josephine Zeno.
And I'm Sophie Cohen. And today we are very excited to welcome Sarah Poole and Serenay Kalkin from Estate Exchange to share with us a little bit about their exciting new platform.
Yes, so Estate Exchange is designed to help families navigate all the legal, financial and emotional complexities of the estate administration process with clarity and care. So welcome Serenay and Sarah. So let's start off with the basics. For our listeners who might not be familiar, what do we mean about when we talk about estate administration? What does it involve and why is it such an important process for families?
Thank you, Josephine. When we talk about estate administration in the context of Estate Exchange, we're talking about that process where somebody's passed away and the family will generally go through the process of gathering through their documents and working out what assets and services they had. And they will typically engage a lawyer or a professional trustee or accountant or financial planner to help them navigate that process, where it is about notifying those organisations, it is about a bunch of forms that usually get exchanged, some evidence points, and going through that process for the end result of either cancelling the service or having the assets distributed to the beneficiaries.
So how did Estate Exchange come to life in that context? So what inspired you to start it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the inspiration for the business came about when I was administering my mother-in-law's estate. Mm-hmm. I was a lawyer, I'd worked in deceased estates, I really should have known the process inside and out, and I did, and yet it was still really complex. Mm-hmm. On top of that, I also was I was the head of deceased estates at NAB and saw what was happening on the other side of that, so I had that sort of dual perspective. And it became really clear to me that, you can have, like, if you just think of the average person, they might have 10, 20, 30 assets or services that need to be dealt with after they've passed away. And doesn't really matter how perfect any of those processes are, there's still 10, 20, 30 processes that need to be navigated. And they've all got their own nuance, as you know. Some will require you to put something in the post, some you have to go to a branch, some it's an email, some require this certification and that certification, and they're all different. And it's time consuming, and cumbersome for the individual involved. So you often end up with delays. On the other side, organisations want to do better. Mm. They don't want to be sort of inefficient. They don't want to be having a bad customer service. And they don't want to be carrying the risk that comes along with those sort of emerging fraud instances. And so there's a real desire from everyone involved to have a better process. What sort of became apparent was that although there are all these nuances that sit across the system, at the end of the day, there's a lot of commonality about what's required. Has the person died? Who's got authority to tell us what to do about this? And some identification, and then usually some forms that get exchanged. And if you look at that, and then you see there's all this duplication in the system, there's all these opportunities for fraud. And then at the end of the day, you've got a bereaved person who is at the heart of that. And I've had phone calls from people who are they've been at the supermarket ready to pay for their groceries, and they're accounts have been stopped suddenly, and they're borrowing money off their kids. And you just see these sorts of real human situations
when
they're grieving. And we've got to do better. So having that perspective, we said, well, okay, how can we look at this at an ecosystem level instead of one-to-one, and how do we really lift up and help all of these organizations and people have a better way? So that's what Estate Exchange is inspired by.
It's really interesting in that personal context as well of, having been through that with your mother-in-law. Yeah. And I know that when my mum died, it was a similar thing that, I've got dad there who's really wanting to get on with things too, because I think sometimes when someone dies, the reaction is they just want to get everything sort of organized and sorted, and you just can't because there are just so many roadblocks along the way. And yeah, just making it easier with things like identification and the forms and all of those processes, and as you say, they're all different.
Different.
And you know, you'll get things returned. Some people require wet signature. Sometimes they, you know, happy with emails, and so it's really filling that gap.
And really, at the heart of it, families shouldn't have to be dealing with that very noisy paperwork when they're right in the thick of grieving. And really, that's what.
Yeah.
That's the change that we want to make to, you know, families who are going through that pain.
Speaking of personal experiences, please tell us both about your personal journeys. What are your backgrounds and what led each of you to specialise in estate planning and administration?
Great, I'm happy to kick off. I started my career as a lawyer, not necessarily as an estate planning lawyer. I was working in financial services. And after probably seven, eight years, moved out into executive roles across public and private sector, mainly leading transformations. But there were a whole bunch of things that sat in that space. And I always think about my career as a bit of a patchwork quilt and all these different things that didn't make sense at the time, but make sense now. And that included working at PEXA, which was digitising property at the time, working in a law firm that did a lot of things, including estate administration, and then in government, and had this sort of experience of government trying to push forward these tell us once ideas. And so these concepts of removing duplication out of systems and making things easier for customers to deal with, digitisation. And then I found myself as head of deceased estates at NAB, which all of these things, all very disparate, but have led to a particular perspective that I hold now.
What about you, Serena?
So compared to Sarah's patchwork quilt, mine's more of like a double-sided throw. So I started off straight out of university, right in the thick of estate disputes. I was working for a national firm, practiced in New South Wales, Victoria, and in WA, South Australia, and it was, you know, you're very, I guess what you would say, very heavy will validity disputes, you know, family fusion claims and the like. And then I realised there might be something out there that I could be useful in as well. So I then moved into banking operations, and that's how I met Sarah. I led a team of associates in the bereavement services team. So I got to really see, similar to Sarah, the other side of the coin, and now moved into legal technology to kind of bring that all together, all that experience, and kind of leverage my subject matter expertise to kind of really kind of create that digital transformation in this space. So yeah, it's been a very interesting journey so far.
So what are the main roadblocks that people face in that estate administration process? Because you both would have seen it from different perspectives, from both the lawyer's side of the coin and also the institution side. So what would the main roadblocks or mistakes be?
Yeah, the main roadblock really at the heart of it is the children or the, I guess, the beneficiaries that are left behind. They don't really know the full picture of the estate. So oftentimes they go on a bit of a fact-finding exercise, which really is hard when you might have different beneficiaries with different opinions in terms of, you know, e.g. the value of the estate, or, you know, even something as simple as chattels being missing from the house. So, and generationally we're seeing a pattern of parents not talking to their kids about their finances, not talking to their kids about what their asset structures look like, because that's not, you know, you shouldn't be talking about money. But the flow on effect of that is the children or the beneficiaries that are left behind are often not really knowing what the full asset structure looks like and having that delay in order to get things finalized.
So how does estate exchange help with that, help alleviate that roadblock, I guess, and have that transparency of information?
Absolutely. I guess one of the, and Sarah would definitely touch on this as well, but one of the things that we you know, we're really passionate about is collecting whatever you do have at that point in time and having that connection and that notification with the institution early on in the piece and very quickly and swiftly, so then you're able to at least start that communication with the institutions that the family might think, you know, they might, you know, they might think that, you know, their parent might have an account with CBA, so you can get in touch with CBA and, you know, pretty much create that communication early on very swiftly, mm-hmm. As opposed to the process is now you write to them, you have to wait till they get back to you via mail, or you might have to call them multiple times to get through to the right department. It's really that fact finding, it's being prolonged now with the current process, whereas we're looking to streamline all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah can touch on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the current state is very much a story of inefficiency and duplication and delays and back and forth across the system, and really a lot of following up and doing the same thing multiple ways. So Estate Exchange is really looking to streamline that and and really just produce efficiency gains for
I think for us, Sophie, that's one of the main issues with our estate administration is just the constant back and forward, like with banks. You'll call and they'll tell you to email this particular team, you'll email that team and they'll be like, no, sorry, you got to go to this team or whatever it is. And it's a vicious cycle.
Yes.
And then it's that additional, when you do get to the right team, you know, it's how many days or weeks has gone by. And then when you do get that response and get the forms, then that's an additional time and filling it out, explaining it to the client. So with us, yes, that's why we're just very interested in Estate Exchange, because we really want to streamline that process and reduce the back and forward and that essentially the vicious cycle
and the duplication, which you touched on, Sarah, of having to provide the same documentation
and
certified
that
documents
really
ID over and over.
Absolutely. And that really wears clients down. You know, you can't underestimate how much that actually wears people down, because this is from my own personal experience. I was acting, administering an estate back in private practice, and I had to tell a widow to go to the bank 5 times to re-identify herself. So you can imagine being on the phone with someone who just lost her husband to repeatedly go to the branch because it went to the wrong department, or, you know, she didn't have the right identification. That really is avoidable when you think about it, but it's just that change that's where we really want to step in and at least invoke that change.
And it does really alleviate the stress for the families.
Absolutely.
Which is, you know, the primary focus, really. Obviously it makes all of our jobs easier.
Yes.
But just making that whole process less stressful for the for the families is really important.
Yes.
And fraud is emerging in this space too.
True.
You know, it just, we never used to hear of it back 3, 4, 5 years ago, and now we're hearing like it's actually quite easy to get a fake ID, and it's starting to emerge in relation to deceased estates, which is really sad and, you know, just horrific that people would think to do that. But if we think about the current state, you've got documents that are getting certified by a pharmacist and then accepted through email or post. Lots of opportunities for interception by that actor.
Absolutely.
By 2025 and beyond, we need to be doing better.
I guess just to kind of digress a little bit and maybe flesh out it a little bit more, when Serenay, you came with Marielle to present how Estate Exchange works, I guess the thing that stood out for us is kind of it's your one-stop shop legal hub, where you just, especially for legal practitioners, you just don't have to go on your CRM, go on that particular matter and say, oh, where are we at? Or what do we need to do?
It's a live snapshot.
You just go onto Estate Exchange and then you've got that particular deceased estate and you know what needs to be done, what's outstanding. And I guess all of those standalone features as well. So touching on what you mentioned about fraud, maybe it'll be a good opportunity just for our viewers at home listening, just to explain how essentially, you know, as you were saying, Sarah Nay, it's a snapshot, how that works and what standalone features there are that can help with instances of fraud.
Yeah, okay. I mean, in terms of the, there's two sort of functionalities that sit within Estate Exchange. The first is the workspace model, which is where the solicitor or professional trustee would go and open up a workspace. And within that, then they can invite in the parties that need to be notified, so your banks, super funds, share registries, so forth. Invite those parties in. The death is verified through our platform. We've got an integration with the Australian Death Check, and that's direct interface with the birth, deaths and marriages in every state. So you get that comfort that, yes, already this person has been verified to have passed away. And then we have another sort of other integrations with the verification of identity. You can share the grant of representation within there, and you're able to just check that directly with the source of truth. And so while, when you're in a secure environment where all of those parties have been verified to be who they say they are, we've onboarded them onto our platform, they've signed terms and conditions, you've got a very secure environment where that information's being exchanged, being checked from the source, and then that's the environment in which that happens. Those tools that I talked about are also available to our customers unilaterally. So if, for example, you had somebody who contacted you to say, yeah, look, my husband's passed away, they're grieving, often the first question could be, send us a copy of the death certificate, which is not a great experience. You could use those tools to look up to see, okay, actually, has that person passed away? If you needed to check the death certificate, you could ask, hey, do you have information from the death certificate with a couple of key data points? And then you could go in and check that yourself. So in all of those cases, you're acknowledging that somebody is grieving, somebody is, you know, the last thing they want to be doing is photocopying and certifying and posting and whatnot. So you're just taking that sort of administration overhead away from them, which is really useful. And in the case of the verification of identity, that's done through IDVerse, which is a third-party provider. A lot of banks use them, so they're well-established. These biometric data, really secure.
And so then that could be used for other purposes as well.
Absolutely.
That's related to the process, but
that's
not necessarily the probate application and the estate administration.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, there was a recent case in Victoria where a probate application was made fraudulently and the solicitor did revoke the grant of probate after finding the real executors. There were fraudsters basically who applied for the grant.
Wow.
And Justice Gray made comments in his opening remarks in the judgment saying that this area of law is very, very vulnerable to this type of attack. So it was essentially a word of warning to practitioners that these type of fraud detection tools should be front of mind. For $10 USD these days, you can actually, conjure up a fake death certificate that might not be, detectable by the naked eye, by the solicitor. So it's good to have these tools in your back pocket.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the death checks as well must be really useful.
Yes.
Because, you know, we don't have a central place where everyone's wills are kept, for example.
Absolutely.
We've got thousands of deeds here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a number of those clients could have already passed away and we wouldn't necessarily know.
And now I think with more and more, retiring practitioners that are probably sole practitioners, there will be a lot of, deeds faults that will need to be transferred. So having those type of tools to check, from a business point of view as well, you know, what type of estate administration work can we foresee in the future? It's good to have those tools to check that and see which documents are live.
Because a subsequent will might have been done.
Correct.
That's
probate
right.
could have been applied
Correct.
For, the whole estate being administered.
Yeah, exactly.
But then some solicitor is holding
this
old
will
50 years ago.
Absolutely.
That's no longer relevant.
You know, some people in their lifetime could make 6-7 wills.
Yeah.
You know, they could move
and not necessarily
absolutely
tell the solicitors that had done the previous ones.
Yes, absolutely. absolutely.
It's good. It's a good tool to use if you're buying or selling a will bank or cleaning up your own records.
Yeah.
Really, really useful. Seeing good use case for that as well. Absolutely. And institutions are using that sort of functionality too to actually like sending correspondence out to a deceased is not a great look. And so a lot of larger organisations are starting to wash their customer lists to say, okay, well, actually who on here has already passed away, so we can avoid sending communications out, which is a great initiative. Obviously, nobody wants to be reminded of their deceased family member by getting notifications. So,
absolutely,
more often than you think.
And so, I guess we've talked about how it alleviates stress for the families, and it's obviously really great from a lawyer's perspective in being able to provide that service to the clients more efficiently and with more care. From the having worked in institutions as well, from that institutional point of view, I imagine the security aspects of it, and you know, making sure that there's nothing fraudulent going on would be really important.
Yeah.
So what sort of roadblocks do you see Estate Exchange overcoming from an institutional perspective?
There's so many benefits for the institutions. If a big one is sort of the efficiency gain, so everybody's trying to do more with less, everybody's looking at their grade of service and how can we do things faster, particularly if you think about the banking sector. They've got at least the larger banks have got banking code to comply with. Superannuation is now in the hot seat in terms of their turnaround times. They will look at having some guidelines. They may even end up with some legislation. So time frames are critical. They report on breaches if they don't meet those time frames. So it's quite serious business when you're on that side. So anything that they can do to help do the work within the time frame is really valued. Obviously, being able to have your staff making phone calls or dealing with complex cases is a much better outcome in terms of both efficiency but also from a customer experience. So that's definitely a driver. Huge efficiency gains to be had over in the other side. And I even just think about my former team and how many times you'd see people going back and forth on a death certificate. Is it in the right format? Has it been certified properly? Just being able to cut out even simple things like that, turning three steps into one, huge gain. And then at the end of the day, everybody's about the customer now. So every organisation wants to do better, and this helps them. It shows their commitment to that. So we've had, in terms of roadblocks, actually, it's been really well received. We have not, there is nobody we've come across who does not want to do better in this space, which is so pleasing. And also being able to see, there's only so much one organisation can do on their own. You can spend millions of dollars and have this perfect process, but you're still one perfect process amongst 20, and it's not actually solving the problem. So kind of taking it up to that next level is pleasingly, everybody's receptive to it and wants to do better.
What can we do as lawyers to sort of get this going? So
great question. Look, obviously, large organisations have got longer time frames of getting things done, more procurement steps to go through, and so there is that sort of those steps that you have to go through. Any lawyers who are listening who want their bank or super fund or share registry to get on board, by all means reach out to them. If it does help, they want to know what others expect of them.
Out of curiosity, you've spoken about the roadblocks with the banks and the super funds. How are you going with share registries? Because I think that's a big roadblock.
We find that quite cumbersome.
Where it's, I'd say, more than a vicious cycle. I think there was one time our colleague, she was the legal practitioner overseeing the deceased estate administration. It was a small share registry, but they also wanted her
license. I wanted a certified ID of her license or something as well. So that was an additional roadblock already with completing all of the necessary forms. So what are your discussions like with share registries, and what are they trying to do to minimise these issues as well?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely got their own complexities and they're very aware of them too. The good thing is all of the share registries we've engaged with have been, again, very keen to improve the way that they're offering their services. So there's appetite. One of the things that we get to do in this role is we've got the lawyers that we're talking to, we've got the professional trustees we're talking to, and we've got the institutions, and we get to play a bit of a role of providing some of that feedback on how things could be better. So some of it is solvable post-death, and some of it plays into what can you do prior to passing that can really help get things in order. Shares have got you know, their own intricacies around, do you have the SRN, do you have the HIN? Communications that go out often have that blanked out on the letters, and so families might have, oh, here's my letter, I've got X amount of shares.
It shows the dividend statement, but it doesn't show the details. Yes, and we've had that exact situation just recently where we just have not been able to find out what the SRN is.
Well, this comes into prevention is better than the cure. Like if you had a, you know, if the person who's making their will, you know, has a portfolio or a folder where they've got all that information, they have their HIN, they have their SRN, they have all their holding information in one spot, then at the very least, then that carves out, you know, the initial issues of where is my mum and dad's SRN. So it's both sides of the coin, I guess, that needs to be given attention to.
Do you have any other tips for what we could do or what we could encourage our clients to do in that planning stage to then make it easier?
I think you're probably already doing it. It's having a collaborative approach. So making sure your lawyers, financial advisors, and your accountants are all talking together.
Mm-hmm.
They're all on the same page, and they already have a relationship with each other prior to your passing. Because from my personal experience in practice, I think the most efficient estate administration file I ever had was the deceased was a very, very smart man. He made sure that his accountants, his accountant, financial planner, lawyer all knew each other beforehand. They even went to lunch together, apparently, on a few occasions before he passed. And then when he passed away, everyone knew what had to be done. They pretty much all talked to me and said, yeah, I'll take this. And I pretty much just took a backseat and I said, okay, well, you just tell me what legal stuff you need to have done and we'll do it. So, and I think that collaborative practice is really taking up a lot of speed. I know it's becoming really, really big in the East Coast. I just came back from Perth. It's also becoming quite popular in the West Coast as well. So we'll definitely encourage that as part of that practice.
Aintree's well set up for that.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, indeed.
Absolutely.
We've got all of those business units together under one roof.
It is worth its weight in gold. So, and that is really going to, you'll see the difference when it does come that time where it needs to be put into practice. You can't, it's unmatched. So it's a good way to go.
We also have Aintree Custodian, which is powered by Be Prepared. I know this is about a state exchange today, but which is a digital vault where clients can keep all of that information in a secure platform.
Yes,
which would then make it easier in the
great. It's a great way to do things.
Yes, much better than keeping a little exercise book.
Yeah,
with all your passwords.
Yes, absolutely.
Think about like what a great it's a much smoother experience for a beneficiary. If things have been organised beforehand, then the lawyer knows who, it's clear which legal firm has the will, who's acting. They can just get straight in it, get onto Estate Exchange, complete the process through Estate Exchange, get that faster, safer.
And the clients
want to be prepared. They do want to have things organised in advance and to understand that process and what's going to happen. And so if we can then explain to them how seamless the process will be in the state exchange, that will make it easier for everybody.
Absolutely. Make it easier for their loved ones left behind.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yep. I guess touching on that, could you share an example? I know, Serenay, you mentioned example, but happy for more examples of a time when good preparation made a significant difference to how smoothly an estate was administered.
Well, definitely the example I just gave, but also having one estate that I did administer was having very, very clear like valuation information as well. This is particularly very helpful in the context of capital gains issues that might arise later. For example, when you have shares that have been acquired a very, very long time ago, oftentimes beneficiaries don't know, or the executor doesn't know what the cost base information is. And then that causes a lot of problems later down the track when it comes to disposing of those shares. So that would definitely be front of mind. If you do have a share structure, definitely think about keeping those historical records somewhere, even if you just scan it and put it in a hard drive. Have them somewhere, because it will save a lot of headache for your beneficiaries later down the track.
For properties as well.
For property, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Even for properties, yeah, absolutely. With properties, I guess, you can have a look through, council records and the like, but it's still, you're going through that digging exercise when if you just have it somewhere, archived somewhere, and perhaps we might even be able to help with this at one stage, but having it archived somewhere will really it'll just carve out all that stress from the beginning, because there's a state administration, and then what lurks in the background is the tax component.
Is the most stressful part. Make it so working with the accountants and financial advisors as well.
Because oftentimes the worst thing you can do is have the accountant involved at the tail end, because I've had matters where the accountant, I take on a file and they say, why do I only know about this now? Like, why didn't someone tell me about this before? It could have been prevented by doing X, Y, Z, or structuring it this way. Have them involved at the beginning,
because there is a strategy involved in administering an estate as well, in terms of timing of when to sell things, and so it is important to have your accountant and financial advisor involved along the way,
especially if in the will itself there's life interests, more complex arrangements, if there's an option to purchase, that's before distribution. So making sure you're having those conversations early to work out a project management plan, if you will, is key. And it solves and alleviates for disputes, so you don't end up at the door of the court.
Excellent point.
Touching
on that and the potential for estate exchange, because it just has so much potential, and sometimes your mind just must go crazy thinking about what it can do. What sort of vision do you have for the future of estate exchange?
Estate exchange gives us the opportunity to bring the relevant parties together, and so if we think about where estate administration is at the moment, it's probably not dissimilar to how it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It hasn't changed that much, and having all of the parties together gives us a real power in that network. So what are the things that actually could be changed at a systemic level? What are the things that everybody together can actually sort of advocate for, and have that power in numbers, if you like? I don't want to give away too much, but there's a lot that could happen in this country across the board when everybody comes together to sort of share their pain points and be open and willing to build stuff. We are very excited to partner with people over different organisations over the coming years as well. So we're all ears. Anything that you want to see changed in this space, let us hear about it, because this is what we're here for.
Excellent.
I do have another question. Talking about pain points, traveling interstate, do you find it's the same pain point in each state, or does each state have different issues to have?
Not so much on the institution side or the organisations, because they tend to operate more nationally. Mm-hmm. In terms of the legal side, I mean, we've definitely created estate exchange to be agnostic of the specific jurisdictional differences and agnostic of the policies and procedures that sit under each organisation or each participant in our platform. So our platform is very much about lifting to the highest common denominator and what can sit across the whole thing. So we haven't really had too much in that regard. Obviously, where we look at the ability to integrate with digitised offerings, some states have digitised their grants of representation, and some have made that available for integration, and some have not. And so it's that sort of thing is very different across the states. That's probably, you know, for us there's an opportunity there, anything that exists as a source of truth to be able to tap into, but that's got to be made available.
Estate exchange aside, I think just from on the ground from what you hear from each state is just how every state has their own probate application processes and how they differ, and then obviously, you know, what nuances are there. That's really the only difference we hear. But in terms of, as Sarah mentioned, from an institutional level, it's pretty much all the same, irrespective of which state you're in.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say is that some this was something really interesting that we discovered is through our rollout was some states do have, I guess, those smaller credit unions that that stand to exist the test of time, but some have been absorbed by larger organizations. So it's just good to see that just how that market's shifted and how we can then tap into those customers that are that are serviced by those former credit unions. That's been really interesting. But as Sarah mentioned, from an institutional level, it's pretty much all the same in terms of pain points.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So if you had one call to action or piece of advice to give our listeners out there, whether they be lawyers or institutions or families, what would that be?
Clear communication is key. Do not underestimate being clear with your family about, you don't need to tell them the balance. You don't need to, but tell them where it is.
Where to find the information.
Absolutely. Mm. Even little things like jewellery or chattels, it just saves a lot of headache. In private practice, I can't count on two fingers how many times I've heard, oh, I knew my mum had a ring somewhere. I just don't know where it is. It's just those little things, or even, I know my mum had I found a MasterCard floating around in my mum's, drawer somewhere, but they probably won't know if it's been closed or whatever else. So just keeping it very, very clear, and just keeping that conversation very transparent. Just keep it flowing. As I mentioned, you don't need to tell them specifics, but just tell them at least where assets are held, and then it would help with the estate administration process.
And my call to action, any lawyers listening, sign up to a estate exchange. Be part of the solution.
Yes.
Be part of the organisation and the network of firms that are coming together to make things better for the estate administration in this country. And feel free to write to the banks that you deal with and the organisations that you deal with to ask them if they are on a estate exchange as well.
Excellent call to action. I second that. So thank you so much, Serenae and Sarah, for joining us today. It's been very insightful and fantastic to learn more, and we can't wait to see where this goes in the future, because I think it really is going to revolutionise the space. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks for being great supporters.
Yeah,
absolutely. Being early adopters and great supporters, and really it's an innovative organisation at Aintree, and we're really proud to partner with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this episode. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll hear from us again soon.